are the algiers in your head. You will see when we turn on the light. I think that demon up your page. Run, 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 run. And when you find your shelter and you crawl into your cave, a pair of twisted eyes, you spy the strange familiar gaze, and that demon is upon you. There's nowhere left to run. The walls are caving in, my friend, your mind is come undone. You feel the darkness stirring, the flicker of a light, a bit of flames, a demon's face. He grins with dark delight. He's with the night and morning.
Well, good evening and a very warm welcome one and all to Dr. Rock's radio show here on MSIradio.com and scotlandisfree.ning.com. That was the John Langan Band playing Demons, before them Faithless and Montrose, Space Station number 5 from a very old rock album, but got a bit of a head on it for it tonight. We're coming live from the Green Gathering, which I listening to the stream from last week's show, I think it was, I actually said was in Cheltenham. I don't know what made that word come out of my mouth. It is, in fact, at Chepstow, so anybody who's in Cheltenham looking for it, apologies for that. We've got a whole series of guests lined up in no particular order. I think the first man who's going to come and have a chat with me in 10 minutes or so is Sean Kirwan, who's kind of head of team here, really. He's the first one on site and is responsible for shepherding the crew into some semblance of order. And he runs regular workshops on dowsing earth energies and other things that we'll be talking about for a bit. Later on in the evening, we'll be having Noel Squibb coming on, talking about water and the healing vortex, finding out what he's been doing since we chatted with him last year, the benefits of spinning water. And he's also hopefully going to talk a little bit about a gathering that happened just a few weeks back now over in eastern England called the Heart of the East Gathering. And this was a first attempt at running a very tiny little festival or a party on kind of new principles, as it were. As far as I can gather, everybody that was there was effectively crewing. Everybody paid a little bit towards it. And the event was made by the interaction of all of those people. Sounds like it went pretty well as well. Haven't had a lot of time to catch up on first-hand news of that yet, but I'll get some of that from Noel. Probably after Noel, I think Lucy Wyatt will be coming on. She was on the show a while back talking about her book, the name of which escapes me at the moment. Perhaps it'll come to me before I finish, but she's going to be talking about various subjects in the Avalon Rising arena. But what she wants to have a chat about tonight is what she calls a countercultural perspective on the ancient history of civilization. I have had a brief pre-chat with her on that one. I think it could be quite an interesting conversation. We're going to have another member of our crew, Steve Juros, who's putting on a presentation for the first time this year called Machines of the Ancients, and he's particularly interested in telluric grids, the positioning of stones, and various other ancient skills that were manifested amongst our ancestors. Also, sometime during the evening, we're going to have Mark Windows along, and hopefully he'll be in with John Witterick, because they've both been doing a bit of work together, and again, hopefully we'll get half an hour with them. After last year, when it was all a bit chaotic, and it's quite difficult in the dark to find people, I have tried to get it all a little bit more organised this time, get them in at some sort of time, and I have, in theory at least, got somebody who's got the masterpiece of paper whose job it is to go and kind of herd people towards the really comfortable settee we've got just outside here. The show tonight's coming entirely from Open Commons, Creative Commons software. It's all being broadcast on Linux from a 12-volt bus, basically, a bus that's packed with batteries and various bits and bobs that are keeping it all running. So it's quite a nice off-grid experience for me. The first slight hitch has occurred in that the person that's supposed to be shepherding people for me isn't yet, so I'm going to have to go looking for my guests myself. So what I'm going to do is put on another 9 or 10 minutes of music whilst I go and round Sean up, and hopefully my shepherdess, as it were. And I will be back with you in 10 minutes or so. Hopefully it'll all work swimmingly whilst I'm away. If not, my apologies. Well, we've been out, we found the rounder up of guests, we found some of the guests as well. Sean is unfortunately busy, as is normally the case with the head of team. But I've got Steve with me. Thanks for joining me, Steve.
Hello, Nick.
And you've been, as well as being a bit of a presenter, which we're going to talk about your talk a bit later, hopefully, but you've been here for 2 or 3 days, haven't you?
Yeah.
What have they had you doing?
We've been basically setting it all up, and as well as the talk space for everybody, we've also got an area that we call the Fairy Glade. So we've dressed all of this up with big butterflies and candles, and there's little fairies everywhere scattering around, a little stone circle down there that we built. And then we've got a big tunnel through the woods. You know, we open a gateway to the fairy realm. We do it on a big scale.
And so it, Brilliant. And it goes down to the healing field as well out there, doesn't it?
Yeah,
as well.
It all links up. That's the lovely thing about this festival. It's quite a small little festival. So.
It is, isn't it? They say that there was, 700 or 800 people here last year,
yeah.
Which makes it really pretty comfortable. And for us, it's kind of like coming home. It's a big team we got this year, isn't it?
It's like a big family. It's a big family. This is the first festival I've done in 5 years. When I did this last year, helping out here. Last year I was just helping out. This year, obviously, I'm doing the talk as well. But it was wonderful. It's the level of conversation around the kitchen table, because we all sort of eat together. We have, the breakfast and the dinners and it's lovely. It's like a melting of minds.
It is really amazing, because there's lots of different subjects being talked about, and I'll probably have a look at the menu a little bit later, but. It doesn't seem to matter how far away people's areas of interest are. We've all got kind of common points, and so everybody learns from everybody else.
Exactly, and everybody, when somebody else is talking, there'll be one little point, and you'll pick out and you go, oh, yeah, because that correlates to something that you thought about or something that you know. And then you'll go, oh, yeah, so that makes sense, what they're saying. And then everybody adds a little bit more to the mix.
Yeah.
You know, we all share and learn, really.
It's one of the great things about coming together, because we're not only pulling off, I mean, we're running two talk spaces here, the Stars and Stones and which is the Auriga Mystery School and the Avalon Rising Dome, and we've got, as you said, we've got the Fairy Glen. We've also got a Peace Dome full of night lights and a huge star tetrahedron in it and all of that. So we're getting all the physical stuff together, but the very act of doing that is in really relaxing and affirming, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, here's Sean. He's going to comment on that. Do you want to slide along a bit, Steve?
Yeah.
Let's have a.
I'll go over here.
It's a fairly tiny space we're in here, but we have got places for people to sit. We'll carry on with you though, Steve, and then.
Yeah.
Because Sean's just arrived. He's obviously sorted out the video. So what's your talk going to be about?
My talk is actually called Machines of the Ancients. And I've called it Machines of the Ancients because, basically, I'm slightly embarrassed to say it, but I discovered social media at the late, great age of about 37 and discovered all these amazing different groups on Facebook. And I'm a stonemason by trade, so stone carving and then all the different science groups and archaeology groups. And in the end, I wanted somewhere where I could just put things I really was interested in, like all different mineralogy and, I'm interested in all different kinds of sciences. But so I set up a little group on there called Machines of the Ancients about 2 years ago. And it kind of exploded, really. It's about 1,200 people now all over the world, all similar kind of interests, all sharing knowledge and, all learning from each other. So I've called it that. My talk is actually about... how... Possibly our ancient ancestors, possibly there were other reasons apart from the why they created ancient monoliths and stone structures throughout the world, as well as the astronomical reasons and the calendars. There's other theories about them being used to actually increase seed growth and crops.
Well, you don't need to move huge stones large distances. If you just want the stones to do the star watching, you don't really need to move like stones from Wales to Stonehenge, do you? And it is a habit of these people to drag the stones quite
away. Why on earth would you drag tons and tons of rock all the way over hundreds and hundreds of miles of terrain on rusty old sleds? For what reason? And that's where my interest was piqued, because I've worked all different materials over the years. I'm an artist, but I love stone, and I love all the different types of stone. And it was like, well, why take what's the difference between, say, a dolerite, which the blue stones are made of, the ones at Stonehenge, compared to a limestone? And I started to douse with the rods.
How easy did you find that?
Once I'd actually learned, the trick is with them to learn that. They will respond to what you ask for, so it's your intent with them. So if you're looking for water, they will find water. Now, I was actually looking for energy lines, is what I called it a few years ago, to deal with some... Yeah, so well, it's called geopathic stress in the house, where you have energy lines that cross in the house. And I wanted to deal with those, and I found out how you could staple them out with copper staples and remove them from the house, and it'll improve the flow.
So it's like a sort of electricity, is it?
It is a form of electricity. It's a form of it's like a very weak electromagnetic force field.
What was it like when you got your first kind of positive response from your dowsing rods?
It's amazing, and you really start to play with them, and they learn. I mean, I basically went from going around the house, and it's quite a few years now, going around the house to going out, and there was another lot, one of these lines. They ran in what seemed like a series, almost like a grid at the time. So, and there was one in the front lawn, and it was there. And I thought, right, well, if I can do the same on a house, can I do it in the front lawn? So I got these two pins, and I made a gate, literally about 4 foot wide, and you could walk down one side and the lines across, and walk around the other side and the lines across, and they didn't. And it was just all these little things. I was like, this is amazing. And then the real changing point for me was when I happened to go out after dark once, a day after or so, and I'd already asked which you know, if they're an energy dog, they must flow one way, and it was flowing a certain direction, and then I went after dark and it was going the other way.
Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, very, very.
Is that a regular pattern? Do things change direction at night?
I read the old straight track, Afro Brotskin Dowsing book when I was about 15, and Jean Michel's View Over Atlantis, again about the same sort of age. I knew a little bit, and I'd heard all about ley lines and alignments, but I didn't actually know what these energy lines, as such, as I was calling them, actually were. And then once I found out they reversed each night, and you have lines that flow one way and lines that flow the other, and they go back and forth all day long, and then you reverse each night, then I was able to work out they're actually the Earth's telluric currents that flow down basically from the North Pole to the South Pole during the day, and then they go back up at night. So
right.
They flow down and up. And there's a rhythm.
Yeah.
And as well as having the main lines that flow down, there's also secondary lines that flow back up at the same time. But then they switch. You can be, a line will flow one way during the day, and then you go there at night, and you can see it goes the other way, and the next one goes the other way. So you've got this steady progression.
And do you find that the like stone circles and megaliths and stuff change these patterns?
I think they used to. I think the trouble is now is that so many of our ancient monuments at some point, quite often during the Victorian age, were rebuilt. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
They were either undug, rebuilt, the stones were changed. Stonehenge has been rebuilt 3 times.
Yeah.
You know, Avebury's been propped back up. Now has a big road running through the middle of it. I think it's very difficult to imagine a very open landscape that must have been, you know, 3,000 years ago.
Yeah, and that's something that's happening all over the world. I know that loads of things in the Olmec lands have just disappeared. They've been diggered up and flattened and removed.
Yeah. So it's very hard for us to actually look at it and go, oh yes, that's how it worked, or what it was used for.
Would you imagine that perhaps with things like cloudbursters and orgone and things like that we can restore whatever it is that we've lost? Because they are kind of like a modern version, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And we have done it. We have scientists that have actually done it. There was a chap called Slim Sterling, who's been doing some amazing work with cloud busting and little energy devices.
Yeah.
Amazing copper constructions.
And they're kind of focusing, as far as I understand it, they're kind of focusing the energies that you were finding with your dowsing rods, aren't
they? All working on the same currents. Everything, you go right the way back to all the Victorian Earth, the guys were doing the Earth battery, like Stubblefield, Bain, back in the late 1800s, and they're working on telluric currents. Tesla's work is telluric currents. Tesla just learned how to amp them all up. You know, and affected any bought in aerials and things. But the basic premise is they work off these telluric currents.
So there's actually quite big physical evidence for all of these things nowadays.
Yeah.
So where does your machines of the ancients talk take you? What was the most interesting thing you discovered in researching it?
I put a rock. I had the line. Once I played with putting the pins in and made the gate, I obviously had bits of rock lying around, and I put a rock on the line. Right, I dug a little hole and put the rock on the line, and the line went around the rock.
What sort of rock was it? Was it a rock with crystals?
It was just a lump of granite. I used to live down in Devon, so it had come off Dartmoor, so it was a lump of granite, you know, which is, yes, there is a, I don't know what the exact percentage of quartzite in it is, but it's fairly hard. But so I put this rock in, and I dug it in a little pit, nothing, you know, it's only a little thing about a foot high, and I put it in, the line went around one way. I thought, that's really interesting. I thought, I wonder if I turn it up the other way, what will happen then? So I took the rock out and I turned it up the other way up and put it in the ground. And the line went the other way around it.
Wicked. That must be really pleasing. Now, talk about cheap fun in your own garden, you know. As I like the dowsing rods. I've had some really good effects with them myself, and each time it happens, it makes you more confident to dowsing for more stuff. Well, that's just a really interesting little intro to Steve. I'm going to be listening to his talk, which is on, let's have a look, you look like you're on at 11:30 on Sunday morning.
That's it.
So I shall come and listen to your talk, maybe record it as well.
Hope so.
And then we can have a bit of a chat afterwards and I can ask you some more specific questions. So it's a bit of a taster, folks, of Steve.
Yeah, it's quite exciting.
Yeah.
It's exciting. This is
I'll pay attention to it all and then we can have a bit of a session with the voice recorder perhaps afterwards.
Look forward to it.
That's really brilliant.
Thank you ever so much for your time, Nick.
Well, thank you very much for your time. It's really great. You can go and have a beer now. Cool. I'll put on another tune and I'll get Sean in from the green room. And I'll be back with you very shortly, folks. Here's another tune. Well, you're back listening to live to Dr. Rock's radio show here on msiradio.com and scotlandisfree.ning.com, coming live from the Green Gathering near Chepstow, not Cheltenham, as I said last week. And I've got my old friend Sean with me. How you doing, Sean?
Yeah, very good.
We've just had Steve talking a little bit about his first experiences of dowsing, and he's been playing around by putting stones in the lawn and finding out where the current runs around them and stuff. And you've been doing it for a long time, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah.
You had a busy year at it?
Not this year, no, but previous years I've been quite proactive.
Yeah.
Finding things, discovering, lines, alignments.
Yeah. And people call you in to do stuff? Do you find people need your dowsing capabilities?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's part of why I studied what they call geomancy, which is the looking at all kinds of energies flowing through a landscape. And it's kind of born out of kind of Feng Shui, Indian, Vastu, and some other traditions. But also the German dowsers were the ones that kind of started geomancy.
And when did that happen?
That was kind of, well, for a long time, I guess. You got to remember that the church building happened with a lot of dowsing input, and a lot of dowsing was done around the building of the ancient churches, particularly Cistercian churches and others that used dowsing a lot, which of course Christianity today doesn't just denies it. But essentially it was those early dowsers that started the practice of geomancy. And that when churchianity decided it was not good enough, evil or whatever you want to call it, it kind of went underground and was used by architects and masons and things like that.
And still is, isn't it? It's used by the chemical industry extensively.
Yeah. It's used by anything which is to do with finding minerals or resources, there are dowsers involved. Oil, diamond mines, gold mines, obviously water. But yeah, some dowsers get paid a lot of money to find diamond mines, oil wells, and it's, a lucrative profession for some of them. But,
and that's still the case, despite the fact we've got all this ground-penetrating radar and satellites that...
Yeah, often it's the dowser that will find it, and then they do the seismic studies and find that they're right, and they missed it the first time.
I wonder if there's an element of the fact that the dowsers has got to discover it before the technology can see it.
I think so. Well, yeah, that's a quite quantum thing to say, but yeah, maybe.
Well, it is known, isn't it?
I mean, I know my teacher he was offered a load of money to do dowsing for oil companies, and he just refused because it's not where people who are working with earth energies. It's not where we're coming from. We're looking to heal, not to exploit. So that kind of there's a very 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 famous case in Germany. Can't quite remember the guy's name, but he was a doctor and also a dowser, and he found this town where he lived that in 90% of all cancer cases there was geopathic stress flowing through the bedroom and the bed of the person. And he did an extensive study. And then he went to another town, which had the very low mortality rate from cancer. And even in that town, it was pretty much 90% of all people who died had geopathic stress going through their bed.
Where does it come from, this geopathic stress in your bed?
Well, it doesn't come from your bed. Well, unless you've got a really bad bed on an old rusty, I don't know. But no, it's actually the upwelling of positive ions from underground water. And underground water under pressure creates this kind of radiation field, if you like, that exhibits these positive ions. And if you know anything about your ions, then negative ions are good, positive ions are bad. They deplete the immune system. Basically, that's what causes it. It's a depletion of the immune system.
If it's getting at you in bed, that's when your body's supposed to be recovering and all of that, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly, and it's really specific to where it flows through the bed. So if you've got it flowing through your stomach, you get stomach cancer. If you're going through your heart, you'll have heart palpitations, breathing problems. If you're going through your head, you'll have migraines, vision, balance problems. Mm-hmm. And it is literally that specific. And so, in my experience, both my grandparents died of similar bowel cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And after I learnt, this was while I was kind of learning this stuff, so I wasn't up to speed. But then when we were coming to sell the house, I realised that I checked their bed, and sure enough, geopathic stress line flowing through the part where the stomach would be.
You do that with dowsing rods, do you?
Yeah.
So.
And the interesting thing is, it was going at an angle, and my gran died first, and then my grandfather died 2 years later. And when after my gran died, he moved into my grandmother's bed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really that specific.
And is it like mostly in bedrooms, or do you find it elsewhere?
Oh no, it's nothing to do with bedrooms. It's to do with where the water courses are flowing.
Right.
So it's about geology.
And we have a lot of water under the ground, don't
absolutely.
We?
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, the bedroom is where it gets you the worst.
Because that's where you're in recovery mode,
exactly.
And where you spend most of your time. Well, quite a lot of your time, anyway.
It's where you go to recover and rejuvenate. So obviously, if you're being drained all night by this geopathic stress, positive ions, then you're not going to recover. And it's just depletion, depletion, depletion until your immune system breaks down and can't cope.
And can these lines of stress be sorted?
Absolutely, yeah.
What sort of stuff do you have to do to... redirect them, or what happens to them?
No, redirecting them. Some people do. Some people stake them. Steve mentioned copper rods.
Mm-hmm.
I don't find copper rods work for a while, but it's not good. Some people use steel to stake them, and that basically neutralizes it. But what I do is actually change the consciousness of the line. Because water has consciousness. And if you imagine water flowing through a town, it's going to pick up everyone's thoughts, vibrations. It can be like a psychic drain. So it's carrying all this information all jumbled up. And from a motor, we know that jumbled up water creates, bad water crystals which aren't in harmony, whereas good vibrations create great water crystals which are in harmony and promote, life. So the geopathic stress is kind of life draining, and the negative ions of clean water is life enhancing. So if you're sleeping on clean water, it's a different kettle of fish. So what geomancers have learned to do is to, by various means, some earth acupuncture techniques, some just using blessing work. Some use crystals, but not many. Some can use the mind to purify the energy, or do a simple blessing like Emoto does on the water vein to basically remove that negative patterning from the water.
It's quite startling to think that that kind of subtle level of energy can have such a profound effect in the physical world.
Well, not from my perspective.
No.
it's yeah. I mean, if when you become sensitive, you become aware of all kinds of things. So it's not just earth energies geomancers look at. We're looking at spirits, we're looking at poltergeist activity, we're looking at microwave towers, what the effect they're having on the people in the house. There's a great story about when Tetramasts first went on. There was a family house down in Dorset, and they had a Tetramast next to them. And basically, as soon as it came online, they had a Labrador dog. All it did was go up and down the stairs. Didn't know what to do with it himself. Because the Tetra was putting out these beta waves, which were very similar to our natural brain waves. So it was just confusing the hell out of the dog. And I think they're phasing it out now. I'm not entirely sure, but I hope so. But
I hope so too, because they seem pretty bloody keen on it.
It's, you know, it's been banned in several European countries, won't touch it. I don't even think America uses it anymore. The antenna have to be at least a mile apart for it to be effective. So, yeah, and, you know, it's not about, it's polluting the environment. I'm more concerned about the police who wear them, because there's been all kinds of problems with police.
It is one of the questions I know that friends of mine people, ask them.
A lot of policemen get health palpitations.
Yeah, migraines.
Yeah, eyes drying out. Yeah, that kind of thing. And it's all problems because of the thymus. Their handsets are right up on the shoulder. So it can affect, you know, it can affect people. But if you want to know more about this, I'd go to places like tetrawatch.org, marssanity.co.uk or .org, I can't remember which. But yeah, there's a lot of information now about it, and people are waking up. People are, you know...
And really the only way to deal with that sort of level of energy is to get rid of the source, isn't it? Or is there some shielding?
Well, no, I mean that... You know, people are making devices now. They're making all kinds of organite things, which they claim to deal with it. I've had some experimentation with it. It seems to work for a while.
So you've
you can use crystals. Rose quartz is good for absorbing kind of EM.
Yeah.
And microwaves. Rose
quartz. Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah. You have to clean it fairly regularly, don't you?
Clean every 6 weeks at least. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Fresh, and the same would be true of the organite.
I think so. I mean, people say they're self-cleaning, but it's not my experience of it. So I would cleanse it just because it's got crystals within it, you know. So those crystals need cleansing.
Yeah. How would you cleanse crystals?
Very simply, you put it in a bucket of spring water or fresh water, a couple hours and a pinch of salt. You can leave it overnight if you like, but it's not complicated.
So the water even cleans the crystals.
Well, of course, because the negative ions in clean water will cleanse the organite,
right,
and kind of neutralize all of that, so then it could start working again.
Yeah,
but there's a lot of things that are happening these days that aren't so great for us.
no indeed, no, it's true.
And Tetra and Wi-Fi are kind of quite low on the list.
I must admit we haven't got any with us at the moment, but I normally do carry a couple of lumps of organite around with the broadcasting kit, because you know we nearly always do it on the Wi-Fi now.
But you know, if
you can't wash it away with beer, man.
But if you don't, you know, if you don't have any of this stuff, you can still do blessing work, because blessing work is very powerful. It's setting your intention into something. So if you're near a mast, you can bless it. You can bless it that it emanates no harm to beings.
Yeah.
Things like that. A very simple blessing. And it does have an effect. And same with your mobile phone. You can bless your mobile phone to cause no harm to yourself.
Well, they do say form is the shape of consciousness, so...
Yeah. But if you need that, I mean, the one trick is to get a 2-pence piece, super glue it to the back of your phone, and just, you know, bless the 2-pence piece to absorb all the harmful radiation. And then after 6 weeks, you just chuck it in the bin, and you spend 2 pence.
Brilliant. No, that's good use for a 2-pence piece. There's subtle use for anything else nowadays. So what sort of workshops are you going? Because you've got a few slots, haven't you?
Yeah, I'm doing dowsing workshops over the weekend. Teaching people to douse, find earth energies, underground water, ley lines.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm also introducing people to nature spirits, which is quite a great workshop, which I think you might have done 1 year.
Yes, it did. Yeah, it was great. Yeah, and, finding gnomes. Yes. Mischievous bunch.
And most people would, you know, take it as that these nature spirits, it's all a figment of the imagination. But actually, there's a lot of evidence now to say that orbs are actually fairies and nature spirits. Certainly, I know that there's a place in Cornwall, St. Nectan's Glen, and people are taking pictures of that, and it just looks like it's snowing with orbs.
Wow.
Because the number of them, it literally looks like you're looking through the waterfall through a blizzard.
Yeah.
And I know from my own dowsing experience and awareness of them that there are tons of the nature spirits there. So I would say, you know, I can guarantee that orbs are nature spirits.
Yeah.
In various forms.
What, and it's the seems to be the digital aspect of the cameras that's made them apparent to us, doesn't it?
Mm. Yeah. It's interesting that you know, the more we advance in technology, the more we seem to discover in some way, but the more it takes away from our connecting to the natural world.
Yeah.
So there's good and bad in, yeah.
Well, there's bound to be a balance, isn't there?
Yeah.
They've got a question in the chat box from Richard Fields, who's saying, have you found Earth Guardians via dowsing?
Yeah, I mean, they're quite common, particularly on sacred sites. There's often some, when you have kind of ancestors buried, there's often someone will take the role of a guardian, and that could be a person who was alive. And sometimes it's actually a consciousness, not necessarily human consciousness, that take up, more like an elemental consciousness, that take up the role of guardianship. And you get this a lot in particularly Native American graveyards, where they're very powerful guardians, and people have died by desecrating Native American, because the guardians take them out. They're powerful. In this country, that they're pretty much every sacred site will have a guardian of some description.
These are sometimes represented by creatures that make themselves apparent to you when you're.
Yeah, they can be elementals. They can be dragons. They can be, you know, griffins are common. Horses are very common. Stags are common. But they also can be a cloaked figure, a warrior-type figure. And these are more like elementals who have kind of assumed the role of guardianship or being told to guard it by some of the people who maybe built the site in the first place. So it's interesting because there's a lot in sacred sites that people don't realise it's going on. It's not just a nice day out. Each sacred site has a function.
Well, I think we dropped the stream for a bit there, but hopefully I managed to get it back. If people in the chat box could let me know that you can still hear us. But we're still here live with Sean. I think we probably are coming up to the point where we'll play a couple of tunes, take a break and get somebody else in.
Okay.
You have some really cracking workshops, and I'll come and try and join in with another one because I did enjoy it last time.
Yeah.
And I would like to develop my dowsing skills, because the first time it ever worked for me, I've got a pair of Hamish Millers.
Oh, really?
The ones with the paddles
on
them.
Yeah.
And your power animal kind of engraved on the handles. And it means that when they're sitting in your hand, you can actually feel them driving against your fingers because they're not round. There's no question about it being the wind or anything. And the first time it happened for me, it really was an empowering experience. And I've played with them since then. I haven't brought them with me again because it was a bit of a hurried departure this time.
Right.
But yeah, I'll catch up with one of your workshops.
Great.
Come and learn a bit more about it. And thanks very much for coming and chatting to us.
Okay, well, I do have a website, georepairman.co.uk.
That's it.
Those who want a bit of information on geomancy.
Yeah.
And I also teach it and be doing that next year.
Yeah, georepairman.com.
.co.uk.
.co.uk.
Yeah.
I'm sure that people go out and check out. If somebody could post that into the chat room, that would be really great. I'm going to put on another couple of tunes. I think we've got another pair of guests waiting in the green room.
Great.
Thanks very much, Sean. Cheers to you, matey.
Yeah.
Bit of beer going down, bit of crisp eating and stuff. It's, see you soon. I've actually got this. I've got this little microphone this week. I've been having a bit of trouble with the sound and stuff recently, and I've got this little microphone that looks like a BBC mic, and it's made out of plastic, and it seems to be doing the job really well. So one or two more tunes whilst I get myself organised with, hopefully, what will be Mark Windows and John Witterick coming and shooting the breeze for half an hour or so. Probably a couple of tunes between now and then, and I'll be back with you very shortly. And welcome back to live to Dr. Rock's radio show on msiradio.com. And I've got now I've got with me, I've successfully rounded up. They were actually waiting around the back of the bus with a can of beer each. We've got Mark Windows and John Witterick in the same van. Let's see. Hey. Yeah. Well, you two have been out playing together. What have you been at, John?
What we've been at? Well, we've been playing. Last week we were playing in Suffolk.
Yes.
We had a fantastic weekend. We decided to. Well, it was a whole week actually. For a lot of us, we decided to go into the woods and make a clearing and then set up a little gathering where we could sort of like have talks and do workshops, and that was fantastic. And
it was absolutely brilliant.
We had a bit
because
of fun.
We talked about many interesting things. It's lovely weather and very nice people, and consequently, that's why I'm here today, because I came down early and because I didn't think I'd be able to come to this festival because I'm working Saturday, but I've been here since Wednesday, which was yesterday, so absolutely marvellous, and the weather's good and the people are even better.
And did it have a name, this event that you put together?
Yeah, well, it was Heart of the East Gathering.
Right.
So it was mostly sort of people that have been involved with the truth movement, but what a lot of us have come to sort of realise is that whatever you focus on is what you tend to manifest, mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And so you can spend all your life saying, right, we're going to fight the system, we're going to bring it down. And actually, it probably works just as well if you decide to actually just step outside it and say, well, look, we don't want to play your game. We're going to play our own game. And so we were very fortunate enough to be on a farm where we had a little bit, a private farm where we actually had a little bit of space to actually do our own thing. Now, okay, it only lasted a week or so, and the main event was just over 3 or 4 days. However, it just shows that we can actually come together and actually do something a little bit differently.
Yeah.
And we can see this as a precursor for something more sustainable and long term.
So what, did everybody pay a little bit to make it happen? How was it?
Yeah, it was a very small amount of money. It was incredibly well put together. And it's amazing when you get a few people around a campfire what can actually happen, because you get a lot of information exchanged in a very relaxed environment, and people tend to be drawn to say what they need to say.
Yeah.
And I think that was what was the great thing about it, same as here in a way.
Yeah.
But that was a much smaller event, wasn't it, John?
It was, yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's cracking. I can't emphasise enough how important it is that heads get together living heart to living heart in what I call meat space. Because that's where it's really happening. The internet is a kind of, it's not really an adequate replacement for actually being together.
It's not at all. It's not at all.
No, it's good for information, but it's not good on the level of real communication. Mm-hmm. When you talk to somebody and you realise what they need to know, and they realise what you need to know, and you start working on that.
Yeah.
Because you can start building something bigger out of that.
So do you think you'll be doing, because I love the sound of this, because we've been talking about doing a gig where people pay a little bit and everybody's kind of crewing, and ideally, did it take them a while to get used to it?
Well, it's interesting that we've actually got Nolan just walked into the studio.
We're joined by Nolan Thacker, who's going to be talking about ether physics, but you were involved in the...
This was his brainchild.
So did you manage to convince people to take responsibility for their own ideas? And
in the end.
But
it took a bit of, it took me standing back basically in the end and hiding in a yurt for a few hours before mm-hmm. people really took up the reins and understood what the whole gathering was about. But it built up over the weekend to a point on the Sunday where people were in a space emotionally and mentally in order to take the reins up. Because the whole point was, we can't really lead a horse to water. You can't make it drink. You can lead it to water. You can't make it drink. You have to facilitate a space where people can have an experience.
Yeah.
You can't actually logically explain to them what the experience is going to be.
No, I mean, as a result of that, would you approach it? Are you thinking of doing it again? And would you approach it differently?
We're certainly going to do it again.
I'll be at the next one.
There would probably be, you know, you learn a lot about people by having them in your space, or not my space, but our space.
Yeah.
And, you know, there would be certain people that we would definitely have back there because they just came in and they just did their stuff and they were pretty damn amazing.
Yeah.
And others just didn't, they're not ready quite yet and they just didn't quite get it.
Well, I mean, frankly, it's something that we're just completely not used to now. I mean, in the,
I
hark back to the Stonehenge Free Festival, which when I went there 7 or 8 years in a row before it finally got busted open. And, what happened the first year I went, I reckon it's hard to estimate, but probably 2,000 or 3,000 people, and by the time it was taken apart, maybe 10,000 or more.
Yeah.
But certainly, and there were some hangers on by the end, but in the early years, everybody that came there brought something.
Yes.
You know, nobody was making any money out of it necessarily, but it might be they brought puppets, they brought, you know, rigs and bands, they brought some of the things I like were like just a little box standing in the field with a little gem in it with light shining off it. And then when we were having free festivals and all you needed to do was turn up with, as Litmus says, with a guitar and something to set fire to something with, people were used to it a little bit more. But it sounds like it's an experiment worth repeating.
Basically, I was involved in the rave scene, so I get completely what you say about that. We used to set up illegal rave parties. People used to come in. We had a real community spirit. People used to protect the system because all the donations that went in paid for what came out. But this is the next level up, because really what we're doing is preparing ourselves for living in community and learning what that's going to be like. It seems to me that most communities that come together, they fail because on a mental and emotional level, people just aren't ready to engage with each other. And what you end up is cliques forming and people falling out of each other and never really repairing those fallings out. And that's what breaks things apart. I've experienced that personally. When squatting in my early 20s and actually forming a housing co-op out of the squat, and then actually having more and more people come in who didn't really understand the ethos, and it just fell apart in the end. So I think what you really need to do, any community that comes together is going to fail if people aren't on a mental or emotional level where they can deal with each other on a level where they're not nitpicking.
Yeah.
And isn't that so much down to
honest communication, which is another thing we've forgotten how to do.
Well, I think that's the great thing about being out in the open and round a campfire in that situation, because obviously it's something that's in our consciousness from a very long time ago. So you're actually renew it, and there were some amazing little moments at your thing, wasn't there, with
yes,
people.
I mean, absolutely amazing moments.
You know, yes, I felt compelled to tell people things, and it was it all kind of, because you're working spontaneously.
Have you
know?
Talked about the transmutation game?
No, not at all.
Well, the whole way the actual festival was set up is that we had a 5-hour period that was split into two and a half hour periods during the day, where we were going to play experience the game and the transmutation game, which is basically, you put an intention in as to what you want to get out of the festival. That could be anything as simple as, I just want to meet new people, to something completely profound. And then what you do is you actually pick a card which relates to that out of a deck. And that normally the cards, they come up with something quite profound, but off the back of that also, you start picking these awareness cards which pick out an aspect on the mental, the emotional, the physical, and the spiritual. And what you can then do is start, we had a board that everyone could put their cards up on once they've done all this, and start making associations with the people that they clicked with on that level. And then we went away in groups and started going through all this in a discussion type sense, and talking through each other's intentions and what the awarenesses were to come up. And the emotional stuff that comes up, you work through with people on that level. And it really opens people up. It allows them to start pushing through these barriers. We have people coming out with stuff they haven't even told their parents, you know, just completely opening
it
up.
Sounds like an intriguing way of addressing the problem that we've just identified, which is that people are nitpicking all the time, because it gives people an excuse for bringing it out in the open when maybe their conditioning
But not everyone. It's not like we had 100% of everyone. It wasn't like we went round and said, right, you've got to come and do this. Some people would choose to stay, do whatever they had to do. So, but though there were those of us that came together and almost took responsibility, said, right, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to get this going. And it's, I think you need a core people come together. You know, like at this festival, where you had people turn up. Yeah, unfortunately, I only turned up today. I'd have loved to have turned up a few days ago.
We did ask you to do that, John.
Yeah, I know.
You were providing a service, really.
Yeah. But it's that... But it's almost like the more you put in to something, and this is something I'll be talking about tomorrow, the more you put into something, the more you get out. But it's not this... We're so used to it on how much do I get out in money or... How much do I get free food? Do I get this? No, you get something out of it which can't even be measured.
Yeah.
And that is the community spirit, and it's something that touches your heart deeply. And you take that away, and you can then share that with other people.
I think that's why I so enjoy being crew at festivals, because I did spend a few years spending the meaningless promissory tokens and watching everybody else doing the work. And it's fundamentally unsatisfying experience.
Yes,
we've all been through that stage, I think.
It's very true. That's very true.
Yeah.
There's a fundamental shift that happens when you address the punter crew system, and you start to make sure that everybody feels that they're part of the collective, basically, rather than them coming into something that's already been done, set up by somebody else.
Yeah.
And so they're an integral part. And therefore, they are part of the looking after of the site, they're part of the looking after of the space, they're part of looking after their mental and emotional well-being as well. So we went through several meditations and tools that people can use on a shamanic kind of basis in order for them to stop dropping their mental and emotional shit like they drop litter. and it's really important to do this, because most people are completely unaware that when they come into a space where there's quite a high level of consciousness, that the lowest basal layer will drop out and empaths start picking this shit up and it starts attaching to them, and they have to go and transmute it for you. So we taught a transmutation meditation, which is all about going into a perceived fire, essentially, and burning this stuff off, but also some important tools like recapitulation, which is like EFT, or soul retrieval, you might call it, where people are going back through their past history and looking for these links energetically, which are basically what you do. It's like an interface where every time you go into a certain situation, you'll have a certain reaction because of something that's happened deep in the past.
Yeah.
And so it's about...
It's like a little habitual part of yourself.
It's about removing that energy, letting it go. So something, you create a space for something else to come in. There's also another important one, which is about sitting in the middle of your roundabout and mowing your roundabout. And that's clearing your energy field and letting you know what it feels like for your energy not to be hooked into by anything or anyone else. And that could include your day job, certain family members, anything like that, basically.
Yeah.
And these are important tools that people need to learn in order to start feeling emotionally and mentally well.
And it's also
the spiritual just drops in.
Yeah, and it's a matter, like Sean said, of setting your intent, because those all set intents for clarity and...
it's coherence and cohesion.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing for us. Yeah. The gathering was based around that.
Yeah, so do you think there'll be another one this year, or is it going to be
We'll be running small events this year, but we won't be running a massive, or a larger gathering until next year.
Because it was, 100 or so people?
It's important
people?
That we carry on
the
good work.
Well, I'd love to be a part of it. I suppose it must have slipped me by. It's been so frantic
Nick,
this year.
Well, Nick, unfortunately, you kind of said to me that you were financially constrained at this point, so...
Yeah.
You would have been one of the first on my list, but I didn't want to pressurise you into coming all the way across the country when we didn't have any...
No,
means
it's been a very exciting year. So. Things are sort of settling down a little bit now, but it has been. This is only the second festival I've been to this year,
because
sort of living life seems to be taking up so much
time.
It's
damn fine to see your face as well.
It's really well. That's, yeah. I will say that it's
most
really
definitely.
Good for me to be here. As I was saying, it's getting harder and harder to stay.
That's what we're doing.
To stay out in the real world and stay polite. And it's also harder to maintain this kind of shiny side up attitude. And I remembered as soon as I came onto this field yesterday how important it is for me to recharge my batteries doing this sort of stuff. living in community, working to produce something that other people can enjoy, and just enjoying meeting all the people again. So I won't miss the next one, even if I have to come on the pedal bike.
Well, I can honestly say that that week, because it was a week, over a week for me, is that, you know, I've spent the last 10 years doing a lot of work on myself, but I felt a shift in one week.
Me too.
Well, really what did you...
profound experiences happened to me over that week.
That I've heard about. I won't ask you to share.
What's your most memorable moment from the week then? Because the week's quite a good long time to spend together, really.
Well, feeling accepted in a community that's really close, and it did, and the connections are still here now, and even the people that aren't here now are here now, because the that energy is here now, and it was, for me, it was almost like having permission to be myself. So if I didn't want to talk to anyone, or if I just wanted to sit quietly, I could do that. If I wanted to get up and sing, you know, an outrageous song in front of everyone on the Saturday night, mate, you know, I could do that.
Yeah. And so you did.
And so I did. But I couldn't have done that in front of people I didn't know. It had to be, it was a safe space for people to express themselves how they wish. Thank you for...
Don't thank me, thank yourself for being the catalyst
to get it together.
Well, it's brought several people to the crew here as well.
I wouldn't be here otherwise, because normally, Nolan said, Sue actually, Sam said to come down during the week. So I never even thought of that, you know. You help out a bit, you know. But generally, it's a very good thing, because we've hooked up through that. And it's brought me here to finally meet you.
Because
making the community bigger, isn't it?
It is. It's making the crew bigger, too.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, there are a certain number of people that I think we all know that are at a certain level of emotional intelligence, without wanting to sound, crass about it, pompous, or whatever the word is, that... You know, we meet up with every year, and we do these festivals, and it's a short period of time. But we, the space that we create, and the vibe that we create between us is just, for me, it's, just a wonderful thing. I enjoy it so much. That's why I come back every year and go for all the pain of setting these things up, just so these people come together,
Because, that's another important thing, I think, to make clear, is that we're not all just happy, slappy people. And it's a happy slappy do. There is quite a lot of stress and strain and stuff involved in making something like this work.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier when it's sunny like it is today. But the amount of stuff that has to be dug in and put together, and then it has to work or be replaced, and then it's all got to be took down and taken away again. But the thing is, it is what we enjoy doing. What we're missing is a patch of land to do it on, and a slope. Because if we could actually get a space where we could start doing it full time.
The interesting thing is, Nick, that the patch of land will come when we're ready.
Yes.
And we need a few more events like the one we've just had in order to get the coherence and the cohesion up to a level where we're completely ready for that. And everything comes in good time.
And we are establishing useful links with so many different people now.
I think it's not just that, though. It really is the being able to deal with each other, because you're never going to have a 100% happy community. But how you deal with the problems is far more important than how you deal with the good times.
Yeah,
and being able to, being on an emotional level where you can not look at a person who's having a rant like they're a, complete asshole, and kind of understand why they're doing that, and then go back and talk them through it once they've calmed down a little bit. That's one of the most important things about a community, how you deal with that. Not how you deal with it when it's flowing.
And I think a lot of it is trying to... We are so... I say we, as a population on this planet, we are so dependent, or we have been made so dependent on the powers to be, that, people expect... Or the powers that were, obviously... That, you expect, you go out, and you expect when you go, you know, out for a drink, you expect somebody to pick your glass up or empty the ashtray or do this and do that. And so what's happening is people are forgetting to just do the little things because that's part of the control, because they've been in places where this happens automatically. Mm. And when there are people like, everyone has to do it, some people, it takes a little while for them to get up to speed. Yeah. Now, there's no, you know, it's just a matter of, for people to wake up. It's certainly no...
well, that's the way the control system works, isn't it, John?
We have to just be a little bit aware, but it is part of the control system which controls us.
That's what we found on the Friday night, though, wasn't it?
Well, yes.
You know, had a bit of a party. They were dropping their mental, emotional and physical shit all over the place. They didn't quite get what we were aiming at. But Saturday morning, everyone came in, sat around the space. There was an incredibly coherent conversation about the respect that we should have for the beautiful space that we were in. The mental and emotional level has to come into that. So there was a few exercises gone through in order to get people in that correct space. And things flowed. Saturday was an incredible day that I'll never forget. The harmonics game that Colin Williams did was, you know, from a 2 o'clock workshop where the 16, 17-year-olds went around picking people up to do these... you know, musical bits or theatrical bits or a bit of poetry. It ended up in us having a full-scale Kaylee at the end of it. Just absolutely heaven.
It's another really important thing for people to entertain other people with their own voices and skills.
Yeah.
I love it when that happens.
I'll never forget Carl and Colin. Carl doing his harmonica, Colin on the guitar, and it's just magical. Absolutely magical.
And at the other end of the scale, you Mark and John, you went down to the Bilderberg, didn't you?
We certainly did. Yeah. But for me, it's this year has and I've said this a few times. This year seems to be totally different from other years. I just feel there's an energetic shift that's been going on, and Bilderberg could have been a big trap where, you know, the police were ready for us and we all turn up and they hit us on the head and there's like nasty, you know, loads of truthers fighting with, and so we didn't know what to expect, but intuitively,
well, Goldman Sachs did pay for our pen, John.
Well, they did. Yeah, I'm quite happy with that. And they paid for those lovely toilets as well. The best, absolutely, best toilets in a field.
Hertfordshire police were
to.
Slightly confused about the fact that Goldman Sachs had paid for it all just to keep us in a pen. And what was really funny was that the cop was saying, well, inadvertently, it's us who've helped you photograph Kissinger and co. coming in, because the Bilderbergers didn't want you to see them. But Hertfordshire police said, well, under health and safety, you've got to have the whole field. So it's Hertfordshire police who helped us get the shots of the incoming
cars. And also,
they
effectively doubled the capacity of the gig, didn't they, by making space for that many more motors.
Well, yeah. I mean, the police were... The ones that we saw were remarkable. No, okay, they did have, you know, riot police in vans tucked away. They had rows of them hidden away. So if it had, and at the end on the Saturday, there was one point where everyone rushed to the, you know, to the fence, and we could feel the energy pushing, and immediately you saw rows of armed police coming up.
But armed? Just riot squad, armed.
No, they were armed police. Yeah. He had the canal, Grand Union Canal, went straight through the middle of it.
Mm-hmm. So now,
and people
you
were
from
actually
London.
Going on. Mm-hmm. People were able to actually get on the barge and go for a run. Yeah. Now, it just happened that by chance, on the way home on the Sunday, I just sat down and this guy sat opposite to me. It just happened to be a Channel 4 guy who knew about the sort of stuff that we talk about. And he'd got on to the actual barge and actually said, he saw a fully armed police. He said, you realise that you should be actually, you know, you shouldn't be like stopping us getting them. You should be in there arresting them.
Yeah.
And he said, I tell you what, if, you know, if I actually had an arrest warrant for them, I'd go in there with this and arrest them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's, you know, that's how close. There were police wanting to use the toilet. We heard there was a policeman that wanted to use the toilet in the hotel. And MI5 wouldn't let the police in because they can't trust, because they don't know You know, if you've got armed police, they won't even let the armed police in because they've got so many layers because they don't trust their own police force. Yeah.
Well, there are also different divisions happening. Of it. You know, you've got the TSG, which is the Territorial Support Group, which is basically a private army for hire, who dress in black combat gear. And they are made up of a lot of ex-military. Then you've got the Metropolitan Police, and then you had Hertfordshire Police. So, I only went there for a day.
Yeah.
But the so-called liaison police were very friendly, actually. And there was one or two of them who were very willing to talk about the whole thing. But ironically, G4 Security had more jurisdiction than the police. That was quite funny because you've got this complete...
How so?
Well, because they were employed, were on private land. And G4 Security were the private police of the Bilderberg.
The Grove Hotel.
That's right. Yeah.
So did you have G4S and the Hertfordshire liaison officers mixing?
Well, it was just extremely funny because G4S was stopping people bringing bottles of water in, you know, and a lot of people were saying, well, that's a basic human right. So some woman ran in and the police were going, well, she's running with a bottle of water. What do we do? And they were a bit confused about what to do, but G4 Security were very, very insistent that it was a big thing.
Well, and was my it mate because it was a glass bottle?
No, plastic bottles of water. Yeah. If the bottle was unsealed, you weren't allowed to take it in.
Because it could be a bomb.
It could be. Well, you could poison somebody.
However,
with
it, we were able to. There was a guy that took in an Orgon generator, which is the size of two footballs. This thing, right? Yeah. Which could have been
But another ironic thing about it was that my mate kicked up a big fuss about him not being able to take his water in.
Yeah.
And while he was distracting them, I just walked in without being searched anyway. So the whole thing's a farce. And if you've got G4 Security in charge of it, you know it's going to be a farce.
Yeah.
Right?
But they weren't actually searching hands-on. It was just the wand looking for metal.
Okay.
So they were taking your water off you, and they were looking for metal. Mm-hmm. They weren't taking people's herbal or like that off them.
What a strange place. I think deprived.
You weren't allowed to take alcohol in.
No. Well, in all honesty, that's not necessarily a bad idea.
No. We were on private land
at
the end of the day. We weren't on public land. Yeah. So
but I don't understand the logic behind stopping people taking water in. Personally, I don't understand the logic in stopping them taking glass bottles.
It's not really about logic. It's about control, isn't it? Yeah. It's not really about logic.
It's the same reason you can't take water onto an aeroplane and you can't take more than 100 millilitres of toothpaste.
Yeah.
I mean, it's control. Oh, because there was was it the underwear bomber or the one
Richard
of the
Reed,
other
the shoe bomber?
CIA.
The guy who set fire to his crotch.
The underpants bomber.
The underpants bomber. Yeah.
Who was working for the
CIA,
I believe.
Yeah, he was escorted on the plane by two men in black. You know, passport, he didn't need to go through passport control and get onto the plane. He was escorted on there, probably given some drugs, and then he put a firecracker in his crotch, you know, I mean.
And because of that, we're not allowed to take water into... Yeah.
Correct, yeah. Correct.
Well, things are obviously working really well.
Yeah, well, this is it, isn't it? Since the riots happened, I don't know whether you observed that the BBC always do the little news soundbite, so say, well, basically, because of these riots, military vehicles will be on the street, and they did show you them in Battersea. And we were in Enfield, we followed the police up there, and we saw those military vehicles parked behind Tesco. So they are ready to roll out. In other words, martial law is already here, and has been for quite some time, because when the swine flu, so-called epidemic, was announced by the World Health Authority, it went to level 6 pandemic, which is loss of all rights, including property, forced vaccination, and being forcibly taken to a centre of detention. So level 6 pandemic was never rescinded. So there you go. I mean, people...
And they introduced that on the back of a riot.
They introduced... what I was saying was that the swine flu, so-called epidemic, that was reported as a level 6 pandemic. And a level 6 pandemic is a global pandemic, right? I don't know how they worked that out.
Because it didn't go... I know that's what they wanted to happen.
I don't think anyone... Did anyone actually die of it?
They actually changed the figures that you needed in order to declare a pandemic for the swine flu.
Yeah. Well, they had to. There's no way.
I think we need to rewind here, because concentrating on this stuff is really concentrating on all the problems.
Yeah, I'd agree.
And what we really need to do, the whole point of having a gathering of like-minded people to come together and experience community was to discuss solutions.
I get the feeling that there were solutions found at Bilderberg, but as a random shaker.
Absolutely. Because
for me, what I came away from Bilderberg was an amazing feeling, and that's why I started to say earlier that I felt this year there's been some sort of shift, a big shift, and what Bilderberg, it was the energy was amazing, and it's not something you can explain to people. If you were there the whole weekend, it was like you could feel the energy building, and because I'm into the sort of a little bit of orming, and you know, we had a circle and we had a little sort of a construct with orgone generators and whatever, that there was a massive, you had to actually be there to feel it.
Yeah.
And when we were in the circle, arming and creating this amazing energy and sending positive energy over to this hotel where there's some interesting sort of beings, but there are other aspects of ourselves, they're not separate from us, and we can fight them, but it actually, when we actually shift, we actually embrace them.
Can you see, they
are another aspect of ourselves. Standing like a bit of a new age.
No, that sounds exactly right. But I really do feel that. Yeah.
Is that we can't go, well, look, they're bad and we're good. Look how good we are. Well, none of us are 100%.
Totally. They're like delinquent parents.
Yeah.
And we still love them, but we recognise that some of their traits are not the ones that we want to carry on. And therefore, we need to find solutions to those traits.
Well, it sounds to me like a lot of people who found their way to the Bilderberger did so because of coincidence and stuff, which basically made it quite clear that that's where they're going.
Totally.
Like I say, the thing is, it's one thing to bring together a community here with a purpose. We've had lots of practice at it and stuff. Yes. It's quite another thing to get a load of people randomly coming together like that and have it, you know, have it stay peaceful and productive. Because everybody I know who went has been struck by exactly the kind of moments that you talk of.
It was powerful. It's very powerful. Yeah. And it went on to the evening, because we then met up in in a pub later, and you know, and then there was entertainment, and well, not entertainment, people went up and played music and whatever, and that energy carried on. Okay, it got hammered by a number of sites saying, oh well, you know, there's people in Turkey, because at the time it was all riots kicking off in Turkey, but fighting police doesn't the bit of a revolution that we saw in Iceland was when the police and the people came together. And we spoke to so many policemen and women that actually shared a lot of our views.
Mm.
Now, that's where, what if we get the police on side, then that they're the gatekeepers.
Yeah.
And, well, the police and the military are basically the gatekeepers between us and the government.
And they are,
we get them on side and embrace them, then the government is a little bit lost. Well, they're going to have to do what we want.
When we think about G4S, the police are fundamentally in the same position as the rest of us, aren't
they? Exactly, because Kellogg, Brown and Root which was Halliburton, were bidding for Surrey Police. I don't know what's happened since with that. Mm. But basically, the police are losing their jobs to private security firms, and the police have been marginalised anyway because they just drive around in vans now. And if the police are needed, it'll be the TSG. It'll be the military police who come at us. Yeah. So, they need to get ahead up to speed with that. Yeah. Really, I think.
So what sort of action have you been involved in recently, Mark? And in terms of seeking solutions to this?
Well, I won a court case against the Waltham Forest Council, who are no more corrupt than any other council, but probably more corrupt than many.
They're just doing their job.
Yeah, they're just doing their job. They're administering our estate badly, and what we need to do is administer our estate correctly and take them to court. And they had a QC barrister against me, and they were denied costs. It's on landofthefree.co.uk. I won't go into it too much here, but it was about a form that they're trotting out called a single person's discount validation form, and I knew where this was going. It's basically giving a third party the right to alter your information, but they're pretending it's a council form. It's not a council form. It's Section 40 of the Fraud Act. We've got them there. It's got a priori in it, which is predetermined liquidated damages. and people don't need to fill that in. So if you're going to get lose your single person discount over a form, you, remember you don't have to fill the form in as long as you provide the information yourself. I proved that in the court. Waltham Forest were denied costs. They still believe they won the court case because this is their change agent training. But in the end, they had to say, well, no, you don't have to fill the form in. Well, that took about 6 months for them to admit that. But the point was that I knew it was getting it was going to lead on to bigger things because people are now being evicted for having third-party mail sent to their address if they're in ALMOs, which is Arms Length Management Organisations, council property. And that's a fact. So I knew where that was going. So we've got to be very careful here.
So what was happening there?
Well, basically, they're starting evicting people en masse. So, and this is happening, you know, it's the same with the mortgages, obviously. Mm-hmm. But in council property and housing associations, they're using any excuse now to throw people out. So people nearly really need to get a bit wised up on that.
Mm-hmm. Are people, because I know that in Ireland we hear that there's anti-eviction task forces and stuff, and yeah. You yourself told me, was it last night we were talking about sort of passive observation of evictions? Was it you I was talking about that with?
Yeah, I'd be interesting to see what success is really. I mean, there was a great one that Lawrence Eastman was at, and he did a brilliant job. He was absolutely fantastic. He got rid of the bailiffs to call the police, but unfortunately, they don't care. They I think we're in a position now.
Was that Lawrence now, or was that Loz?
Loz. Yeah, Lawrence. Yeah. That's his name.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Sorry.
So so basically, what people need to be very aware of is this fraud upon fraud that they're committing. So they're committing fraud upon their own fraud now. And that's something I think to be really... This is where you can get them, because under their own system, they're failing.
Mm. Yeah. And you are managing to prevent some of this stuff?
Well, certainly. Mm-hmm. Because that case that I did, even though it's a small case, it sets a precedent. Because the judge ruled that you do not have to fill in their paperwork as long as you provide the information yourself.
Was it county?
Magistrates.
So the problem there is putting it on the form, not providing the information.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the point is that what local authorities are doing now is they were given powers of central government, basically, and they are acting out of control. They are trying to shut small businesses down. It's incredibly funny. They have this thing called the Waltham Forest News, which is it's just basically a propaganda piece for the council. And they've started naming and shaming people in it. Right now, they're naming them, shaming them for enviro crime. And we have this criminal in Waltham Forest called Clyde Lokes, who was brought in from Northampton, who's completely brainwashed, and he was the one who introduced fines for people spitting in the street. Yeah. Now, if you look at the list of enviro crimes, you think, oh God, people fly tipping, that's a terrible thing, right? It's nothing to do with that. It's about people displaying advertisements in their shop windows or not having a waste carrier's licence, which they didn't even know they had to have. So basically, they're just persecuting people, armies of drones persecuting the public, and we have to stop them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We have to stop them.
Yeah. Yeah. Surely one of the best ways of stopping them is to ignore them. And
The problem with the administrative process, which they're doing now, is that even the courts are... for instance, if you want to be a litigant in person now, you have to go through a private company to go to county court, and it's called Money Claims UK. It might as well be Wonga.com.
Yeah.
Right? It's absolutely ridiculous. And they're on company's house. So what you can do is you can make the company liable for what they're doing to you. So you're a private company making me fill in a form for a court, which is court business. So how does that fit in to the court rules? All you have to do is find the relevant court acts and basically go, well, wait a minute, you're all committing fraud upon fraud upon fraud. But I don't think they care, because it's spiralling down, and I think this is where we can win.
When I hear about these things, I'm reminded of a friend of mine who was gardening in a place in Mid Wales, and a couple of people from the county council with plastic badges came on side asking him, are you a gardener, are you working for cash? To which, you know, he just answered all of these questions. But surely one of the best things to do is not cede them recognition or any kind of jurisdiction over you in the first place.
Exactly. I mean, the thing is that they are drones. They're just people who've been trained. And the thing that the where I live, that because you've got it's a huge borough, and people actually genuinely get frightened of this stuff, and they think these people have got power. And I keep telling them, look, you've got the power; they haven't.
And it's easy for you to give your power to them, isn't it?
Well, yes. Absolutely. I mean,
they got power if you give it to them.
Yeah.
Isn't the key actually asking questions rather than answering?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what you do with the police.
Your power,
yes, yeah. Because this is what these people are trained to do. It's all like the police now. I don't know if you noticed, but they'll say, "Oh, can you stop being aggressive? Can you lower your voice?" No, you haven't raised your voice. So if you turn it around on them, say, "Oh, can you stop shouting at me, officer?" It really does work. I was stopped having no seatbelt on a while ago, and they told me to go away.
Did they?
Yeah. It was quite funny. Brilliant. But the guy gave me... He stole the key from my van as well. But
Darren, actually, a DJ, actually said that if you can...
Daniel.
Get it, yeah. Is, he actually said, if you can get the first, you know, not answer the question,
yes,
and get them to answer first, you can get away. Because what's happening is energetics.
Yeah.
It's nothing to do with the law or anything else. It's to do with energetics.
And it's the way they're trained. They're actually trained to, because what they need to do is subdue you first. Yeah. So basically they're going to say, "Can you move back, sir? Can you move back?" Yeah. It's all this garbage. So they're trying to make you aggressive. So that they can meet you.
There's a simple question, isn't there? Which is, who's asking? And then you can ask where they came from. And then you can ask, have you got a master? Oh, sorry, who do you work for? And by that, those are three questions which really, before you talk to anybody, you'd want answered. And it establishes exactly what you're talking about. It prevents them from having the...
A good one for county court now is just say, are you going to hear this case without prejudice? Because they can't, because there's a third party involved called Money Claims UK.
Yeah. What a bizarre name for.
Well, you'd think they'd call it crap.
Prejudice anyway, because they're part of the same financial
set. Well, we know that, but the point is, it's a good one to throw at them, because they now, even under their own lies, they can't say that.
They're,
you know.
They
blatantly are. I mean, it's just incredible. Yeah, you'd think they'd make it look like it wasn't a private company, wouldn't you? You know, like they'd say it was Crown Claims. Thank you. United Kingdom. But no, Crown Claims UK Limited haven't Portsmouth.
This,
you know what
is
I mean? What,
this is
ridiculous.
One of the things, though, isn't it, is that it's becoming really obvious. They seem to be putting it right in front of us. So you were telling me, John and Mark, that you've been doing a bit of stuff together.
We've been drinking a lot together, haven't we? We've been in lawful rebellion for weeks. Well, I can't remember any of it though. No, we've been having a good old chat around the campfires, and John's doing great work, you know.
Yeah, lawful rebellion is. I wouldn't say I'm in lawful rebellion anymore. I did that.
I'm joking. I'm joking. That was in 2008, right?
Yeah.
No, we're not doing that anymore. But that was a very good entree.
Yeah.
But it was a complete joke that we're in lawful rebellion. Awful rebellion, actually. Yeah. I think we're in awful rebellion.
What do we actually do, though? This is the thing.
Yeah.
The actual solutions to these problems. Mm. Okay, so there's this certain thing that we feel is being foisted upon us. We're still acting like victims towards this system which is perpetrating these.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying, Nolan, is that I'm not. John's not. What we do, see, the thing is that people are getting squeezed harder and harder now, right? They financially and everything else.
Right.
So basically if small businesses get together and start fighting this garbage, especially that's going on in Waltham Forest, because they seem
what's
to be
the, what's the word that comes to mind when you start thinking about small businesses getting together? Because normally we talk about competition, don't we?
There are small business associations and stuff like that. I mean, basically, I'm talking about being looted by a third party who we do have a liability to under the poor laws, right, which is the council. You know, that we did all that council tax stuff years ago, like you were saying, lawful rebellion stuff. Basically, the liability won't go away what John does and what we do through Land of the Free is we offer the solutions within their system where you can just go, you know. But
there's solutions outside the system. I don't know if anybody's seen a film called Monsters, Inc.
Yeah.
Scaring the kids is basically...
Yeah, I know, but really, you're talking on a broader level. But
basically, we're taught that competition is what drives this system, and it brings
prices
down.
That's not what
down.
I'm talking about.
No, though. I'm not saying that. Yeah. Hear me out. Cooperation, my feeling is, when we start cooperating with each other, we're
going
to find out that it's at least 10 times stronger than competition.
That's what I'm just saying.
I know you are. Yeah. I just want to spell that out.
And that really is one of the messages that we keep coming up with, is that actually, rather than fighting anything, making cooperative and energetic progress in the other direction is what's needed.
But tomorrow I'm going to be talking about spiritual economics, and it's like, you know, we're in a situation where we have different car manufacturers producing pretty well exactly the same thing, but spending huge amounts of money, you know, in competition with each other.
Advertising.
When the advertising, marketing, trying to get the edge on each other, when if they all work together... And produced, you know, like what you know, came together. It like cut the costs, and they could actually make cars that would last 20 years.
Yeah,
and actually, you know, there's just so many ways. But it's we need a shift. We need to turn everything upside down.
Some people would say that if you do that from top down, what you'd end up with is sadly communism.
But that's
so
only
what we're actually talking about is. Initiatives coming from bottom up.
Totally.
Yeah, but they're all manufactured constructs. Communism is a manufactured construct. And the illusion of capitalism is a manufactured construct. Yeah. None of it's reality.
Yeah.
Basically, it's you're born with a liability to the state. And there's a very interesting way out of that. You form a new society, which is what I think this is the way forward. But a new society outside their society can be difficult because obviously they take crown ownership of land, everything ultimately, but there's a very interesting thing that you could look into that it's not talked about very much anymore, but the organization known as the Hell's Angels was set up by World War II fighter pilots who created a new society, and it can be done. We could all insure our own vehicles with our own underwriter and still be in their system but separate from it, not getting ripped off. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, this might be the time to mention the Universal Community Trust, which myself and Nick are.
Both. Well, the trust issue is very, very important. You want to talk about that, Nolan? Yeah.
Well, essentially, it's created its own jurisdiction already, which is an implicit rather than explicit jurisdiction. But it's a series of 23 trusts in this country and 2 in North America, which have come together in order to form a nationhood. The recognition is that it works from the family trust upwards. The beneficiary is always in charge. The trustee does what the beneficiary asks. And essentially, it's pushing forward into a situation where we are looking eventually to procure plots of land and start putting the community stuff into place. But what we are trying to do is create the jurisdiction's already there, so what needs to happen next is court systems need to be engaged with so that we've got our own jurisdiction where we're actually putting stuff through. So rather than people going through the system that's there, they've actually got a separate nationhood essentially. And that we can pull them straight back into our jurisdiction because they're not actually in that one anymore. Mm-hmm. Insurance is a really easy thing, as you say, Mark. You just need to get, say, 1,000 people together.
Yes.
Tithe a certain amount into it, and you cover the person that's injured's disability or inability to work or whatever their inability is for the rest of their life. Essentially, that's something that I think all of us would do given the chance if we injure somebody else. That's something you'd naturally want to do. Road tax, no need for it. You know, these are our highways. They're paid for by our money. Why would we need to be taxed on them? Does the tax go to the roads anyway? I think Litmus, who's going to be here later on in the weekend, has basically proven that none of the road tax goes towards tax. You know, tax goes into one pool.
That's right.
Basically, I think if you look pay at any kind of tax, including VAT, you are paying for bombs.
And isn't it true that acting in community and in one of the problems one of the challenges we face is that it's very easy to pick people off one at a time, whereas it's much harder to pick people off if they're working cooperatively together.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Universal Community Trust is a fantastically optimistic and highly energetic attempt at dealing with some of that. But also there's the business of, like, I like to say that the Linux software is all built up of tiny little programs, all of which work really well. And somebody's gone in and stitched two or three of them together to make sure they work really well together. And it's a good sample of how all individual activity in the end is going to make a difference to what's going on the ground.
Yeah, and I think if it's successful that creating a new society, they'll want to keep it off the radar, which would be good for us. You know what I'm saying? They won't want to be advertising that someone's doing that. They're going to be pretty scared of it. But
the fact is, if these are test beds.
Yeah.
I said earlier on that the system's like a delinquent parent, and you have to love it. But the minute we're like teenagers, so we like to have our hissy fits, our spats. We think we kind of know it all in the minute, and we could look after ourselves. But we're still learning how to do that, and we haven't grown into our adulthood yet because we have been put into this system where we're looked after like we're kids for all our lives. Everything's provided.
Yeah. We don't know how to live from Mother Earth anymore. One of the things that seems to be occurring to me is that we're being forced to change our mind on that. Circumstance is making all of us move.
Yeah, very, very, very true.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. The more it does that, some people will freak out because they will not want it. Mm. But for me, the opportunity to do this is absolute godsend.
Mm. And we haven't got a choice.
Correct.
You know, it's not like, oh, we can carry on like we are. We can't carry on like we are.
Like the Faithless song I played earlier, inaction is a weapon of mass destruction.
Totally.
Well, I think you find that most people have completely lost direction if you look at the way the general public in this country are. They don't know what to do anymore because they're having everything taken off them.
But don't you think they're starting to realise that they don't know what to do?
Most people I talk to completely agree with almost all my points of view, but are too scared because they don't know what they'd replace what they have with.
It's the fear that if you act, whatever comes next will be worse. It's better the devil you know.
And historically, we've always been given duality. So what you want? You want communism, do you? No, we don't.
It's like the old thing where we go, oh, but that would be anarchy, wouldn't it?
I want to get rid of them all, then, wouldn't it? So you want a republic? No, I don't want a republic. That's right. I actually want something that...
Oh, so you don't
that's not in your head.
Yeah. Oh, so you
that,
don't
that we
want...
We haven't explored yeah. yet. Well, yeah. we haven't been there yeah, for a long time.
Yeah.
We've had these structures in place where we've had matriarchal societies... Yeah. which were in balance. They weren't actually matriarchal societies. Mm. But if the balance was going to be anyway, there'd be slightly more female than male. Yeah. So,
My favourite response is, oh, so you don't want people to build roads? Yeah. As if we'd stop
building
roads.
Well, it's like the thing of the, you know, the thing before liability. I mean, the old Nordic law was that basically you were a caretaker of the land, you looked after it, and you had a duty of care to the land. Whereas now the crown takes ownership of it, so nobody cares.
And look what that duty of care has done. Yeah. Yes. You know, it's resulted in litter. People drop litter, but not just in towns.
Where I live is...
Well, I think that's out of frustration because it's like they feel that they're in a prison. They know they're in a prison, but they can't understand it.
Right. Somebody will pick it up.
Yeah, a lot of people throw stuff at it. I just think it's because they're unable. They've not ever had the opportunity to connect with nature in a profound way.
Yeah, that's part of it. That's definitely part of it. But I think a lot of it comes from helplessness. It's anger.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? It's anger.
Yeah.
Really.
The system is notoriously wasteful. I mean, the Pacific is full of, I think it's 5 rafts that are the size of this country of plastic just floating there. No one's prepared to clean up.
Where I live in Dorset, we get a lot of stuff onto the beaches. And there are regular sort of like clear up days where volunteers go and pick plastic off the beach.
Not the council.
Some of the National Trust beaches, the National Trust will pick it up, but the rest, well, no, they organise either volunteers or whatever, but most of the beaches and there's a huge amount. And I think the National Trust actually, or the council actually, get trucks. Yeah. But, you know, you get a few hundred people.
Yeah.
Tons of the bloody stuff.
But, thanks, Sean. Sean's saying he's loving this chat in the chat box there. I thought I might put on a couple of tunes, because I know about you, but I could do with a comfort break. I'll put on a couple of tunes then, folks, because we need to just go and, you know, restock on the beer and make sure there's enough space for it. So here come 10 minutes of tunes or so. And the...
This is Media Streaming International Radio.
There you go, you're back live with Dr. Rock's radio show here in the bus at the Green Gathering. And we did manage to, we just shooted the last three guests out. That was Nolan and Mark and John. And bang on time, Noel and Lucy have turned up to talk to me. So thanks very much for coming along, guys.
Pleasure.
Yeah, don't confuse Nolan, Nina, and
all these names.
This and is just Noel.
We can provide a nice little link here, really, because you were both down at the Heart of the East gig as well.
Indeed,
weren't you? In fact, you presumably, Lucy, pretty key on putting it together, were you?
Well, I was just supporting Nolan.
Right,
you understand that. You know, it was entirely his idea, and I went along with it because it was, you know, I was happy to host.
How long was it in development before it actually kind of came about? How long did it take you to put it together?
Well, I think we started talking about it at one of our group meetings in the spring, wasn't it, I think?
Well, and we felt the group meetings had petered out a bit, and we were trying to find a way to revive the vibe, because we weren't...
And Nolan was really keen on this idea that there are lots of groups, particularly in the east of England, who don't communicate, but who probably share similar views and similar ways of looking at life.
So did you invite people along?
Well, initially we were all told we could invite 12 people, weren't we? But then it discovered that sort of Nolan had done most of the list or something. But that was fine, you know. So that's why I say it was really Nolan's party and his idea.
So we had sort of Avalon Rising, was the Auriga Mystery School there?
Yeah, there was quite a few from that, yes. He'd have a better handle on actually who he pulled in.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't really get too involved in that.
He said that there was a sort of transmutational game played, and that there was quite a lot of meditation. Were there talks and presentations as well?
No, there were no talks and presentations. It was initially going to be around the transformational game that Colin Power does.
Yeah.
But he was a bit late getting to us. So we started, because he couldn't get there for the Friday, had transport issues. So we started off on the Friday with an intention game that Shamanka organised.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the two did fuse together very well, because the intention game, which is where we wrote each on a card what our intention for the weekend was, and then she had various cards that you could draw, which gave you an insight into what that intention was. These are random cards that you selected.
I bet they worked well, didn't they?
They worked really well. It was completely fascinating. So that was on a very personal level. And then when Colin turned up on the Saturday, the thing that he does, the experience thing, is more kind of global issues. So it was really interesting to see how the two mixed
together.
So
you did a kind of personal thing to start with, and then you were able to grow it from that point to more...
And we divided up into small groups, so that then we could talk about this personal stuff. So each person could go around and discuss their intention and how the insight related to that intention. And the thing that actually shocked me was just how much personal stuff came out and how important people felt it was to share it.
Perhaps the time's come for that to come out in a civilised fashion rather than as a kind of fight.
Yes, but it was amazing that these were often people who had never met each other. And I think the thing for me that was very powerful is they obviously felt safe enough to do that.
And it sounds like as a result of that, that a more intense community grew more or less overnight.
Well, indeed, there was some very strong feelings amongst everybody on a group level, which was very gratifying to experience it.
Did you have it in a kind of woodland setting? Well.
Yes, we had it on a bit of the farm, which is it's got these woodland clearings in it, so it's, you feel quite screened. It's got a lot of rhododendron, unfortunately, but they do make good screens.
Yeah.
And this is an area where there's quite a lot of silver birch, which is a good tree because it's a significant tree in terms of being pioneering.
Yeah.
It's the first tree that you find that grows.
Very magical tree.
Very magical tree.
Yeah.
That creates new beginnings in that sense.
And I've been spending a lot of time over the last couple of weeks in a piece of ancient woodland, and I must admit that I've noticed that the trees themselves seem to be a calming influence. Just getting there relaxes me.
Yeah, that's very true. And we had a fantastic beech tree, didn't we? It was a chestnut tree.
Sweet chestnut.
The sweet chestnut tree.
Quite an unusual tree in this country.
And very big, this particular one.
So there's old trees there.
There are some old trees and some oaks as well, fantastic oaks.
And so presumably the other ones, the birches and stuff, are coming as a bit of regeneration.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. So there's a good mix of stuff.
Do you think you'll be doing it again in the same place?
I don't see why not. I mean, the other thing that was brilliant about the weekend is it clashed with Latitude, which is a big local festival. But that was, like, great, because we could make as much noise as we wanted in the woods, and nobody could say anything because they just blamed the festival. You know?
So, oh, that's really clever.
Yeah,
that.
It was really neat.
Undercover.
And, yeah, totally. And it meant there was all the local area becomes much more tolerant of all sorts of people turning up because, you know, Latitude's on. I mean, it's quite a well-supported local festival.
Did you try to get... I mean, it sounds like it was a fairly locally-based gig anyway, but did you try to get local people involved as well?
No, it was more whether they were local people who were friends of friends who, you know, knew Nolan or myself or whoever. So the thing is, because I'm very well-placed there, local people are very supportive of me. I don't have any problems. You know, it's an okay place to be. I get on well with my neighbours.
Yeah.
You know, so
I think that makes all the difference.
Totally,
it does.
Totally. You know, and I'm not seen as an alien, you know.
And that means that in the long run these kind of gigs can, you know, if we get a bit of practice amongst ourselves that can then start including other people.
That's right.
Because I frequently say that the people who went to festivals maybe 10, 20 years ago don't know what it's like being at a place like this, where, okay, there is a dance stage, but it's a long way away over the other side.
Yeah.
There's a kind of an acoustic stage, but there are all manner of, like, I mean, for want of a better word, educational. There's lots and lots of talk tents here, lots of forums for listening and discussion and the like.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that we've been moving towards the kind of thing that you're developing now for some 10 years or so.
Yes, that's true. It's true. Well, it's very good to have these. Because there are not many places where people can exchange information and feelings, and we don't have many opportunities for those. You know, the other thing that shocked me was how quite a few people were quite distressed who came, and who had been feeling very isolated, particularly some of the women. I heard these stories afterwards how, for the first night or so, they kind of retreated to their tents in tears.
Mm.
But by the second night, they'd kind of got over that and they'd joined in more. And it's just such an awful comment on modern life that we are all so cut off from each other. You know, so it was lovely that could happen.
Yeah, yes, indeed. Yeah, and of course, you send out, once people have experienced that, they know in themselves that it can happen.
Yes.
Which is bound to be a bit of a lift.
Exactly.
And they're going back out into normal society with new ideas.
That's right. And they can know that there are people around who do share their views.
Yeah.
Because we've all got very fragmented.
Mm.
You know, we are a virtual reality mobile community in that sense.
Yeah. And if there is a solution, it is going to be in community and being able to communicate with each other and find the common unity
that
is our birthright, really.
Well, also to be able to, as we were talking a bit earlier, to create spaces where people can travel from one safe place to another safe place and be amongst similar people and feel safe.
Yeah.
And exchange their ideas and explore new things.
And it's sort of fed back into the Avalon Rising crew, because we've got a lot of people are here specifically because they enjoyed so much the experience of being at the heart of the East.
Yes, it's a bit like a reunion.
Yeah,
coming up this weekend.
And it's made us a bigger, stronger family as well, because it's a well-established crew, this one, as well.
Totally, Yes.
And it's good for us to be taking new people on board as well.
Yes, that's very true. That's very true. I mean, I was here 2 years ago, and it's, well, with you as well, and it's lovely to see how it has grown. And, there's that same vibe is still here.
And people have not fragmented. We've not lost anybody.
No, that's true. You know, some people have gone off in strange directions and changed their minds.
Yeah. Well, we're all free to do that, luckily.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. But it's interesting how you've all had the same reaction. I think you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and you've all gone, no, that wasn't the right one.
Oh, yes.
For the same reasons, you know.
Yeah.
So I think that in itself says something that we all seem to have a rather similar view of stuff.
Yeah.
So that's why it probably didn't resonate.
So what have you been at, Noel, for the last year with your Vortex science and swirling water? Have you been doing any experiments?
Last year I was excitedly telling you how I'd built this pipe 84 metres long and got water spinning down.
Oh, that was it, yeah.
And then I thought it was going to be a Schauberger device, the universe filled me into building it because the water diva moved in and we ended up with healing energies being emanated from it. And we had some quite remarkable, probably still do have some quite remarkable things happen.
So it's got water flowing through it as well.
And the water spins as it flows down the pipe. And
we kind of expect that to bring a healing energy.
Yeah, that's right. And I've got metal wraps around it further down the pipe that put positive vibes out that you can pick up by wrapping a similar material around your pipe flowing through your house, and you can put the energetic transmission into your water pipe in your house.
And so that means it's kind of broadcasting.
Yeah. That was one of the early sort of aspects of it.
The 84 metres long is important. Where did you get that idea from?
Because that was as far as I could go on the mine location that I can play on.
Right, okay.
I'd have made it longer if I'd had more ground.
You're doing quite a lot of work on that ground, aren't you? You sound like, if I remember right, you're doing quite a lot of sort of transformatory...
I'm trying to work with the Environment Agency as well on a restoration project.
And how's that going?
Well, they love me. It's really amazing because the energy of the site now is such that they love coming and they love chatting to me, and they kind of... You know, they talk about me behind my back, but they clearly are quite respectful. And do you know, the amazing thing is, not one of them has ever said to me, what's going on with that pipe? Or said to me, you really shouldn't be taking that that contaminated water and doing what you're doing with it and then putting it back further down. You should let it all do what it should.
So there's a really important thing about interrelations with people, basically... We are all living entities, and eyeball to eyeball and living heart to living heart. It's possible to overcome all sorts of prejudices rather than reinforce them.
But they're not coming at me as Mr. Clipboard. They're coming at me as kind of like decent people.
As men.
Trying to fix the problem.
Yeah.
And they see me in a positive light because they're not used to landowners being not just cooperative but actually keen to do what they want to do.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of fun.
So do you think, clearly, it's informing them meeting you and coming and talking about your projects. Do you think at any point they're likely to start moving towards seeking actual advice to change their own ways?
No.
But having said that, keeping them off your back.
As individuals, yes, but collectively, no. No, they're too wrapped up in the paradigm of, you know, like science and you know, we do it our way. But I'm not worried about that because, you know, if they can find the funding and I can kind of jump in with them and I can end up with mounds and lakes, then the Lakeside Fishing Lodge becomes part of the play.
Sort of step at a time.
Yeah.
And make no mistake, it's easy enough to piss the Environment Agency off so that you don't get to do what
Absolutely.
You want to do.
Yeah.
So what have you got in mind to...
Well, to just kind of keep you backing up a little bit, having done the pipe... I got a bit of a breakthrough here last year with one of Sean's workshops where he introduced me to Archangel Michael, and that effectively got me the protection that I needed to go on and do the next project, which was an all-going ranger thing that I'd been shown through.
What is an all-going ranger?
Right, what is it indeed? Okay, the concept is quite simple. You're drawing negative aspects, energies, ideas in, spinning it through up into the transmutational love and light, healing it, sending it back down on the breathe out, spinning the golden healed love and light back out from where it came. And if you want to, you can get a series of small orgone repeaters laid out beyond the hub on the sacred spiral, and there's no limit to the space that you can effectively heal.
All right, so they're like little.
Your
yeah, I will do.
So they're like the they're like little sub little yeah, step
that's,
up.
That's the concept. Yeah.
Transformers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, the primary thing itself, it consists of a copper wire that spirals from flat up through a round wibbly wobbly pointy like.
That's a technical description. Yeah.
but it's all been doused. The shape's very similar to the cork in the end of the pipe, which is very 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 specifically shaped,
right?
But it's like a round wizard's hat with a little bit of a wibbly wobbly on it.
Yeah,
and there's a copper wire around the outside that goes and it compresses the spiral a little bit as it comes down, so it ends up with a vertical wire, starts off with a horizontal wire.
Right.
Then the top thing's a copper sulfate crystal, and below that it's layers as you would build up organite. And I was given the bright east crystals because that's what the mine is that I'm playing on.
Yeah.
So a lot of the crystal came from the ground. So various metal layers and brass discs, mm-hmm. And basically every inch of it was doused. Then I had to condition it by putting it up a tree where the tree roots went underneath the stream that runs past the site for 48 hours, and then I put it on place. And the place was the most amazing thing, because it's a lumber concrete that I never thought anything about. And I've been told it would be within 20 metres of the pipe, and I couldn't imagine where this would be. And then when I was taken to the exact spot, I thought, oh my God, nobody's ever going to see it up there. It's just quietly tucked away, doing its thing, up in the air, 2 metres up in the air, above everybody's head. You do not see it.
Right.
And then I was gradually able to build up the copper wire. I've used the solid copper wire that came from it on the sacred spiral till I reached the pipe itself. And then I connected that spiral wire to the field wire that wraps around the pipe. Because obviously when you're doing a pipe 84 metres long, you're bound to put a spiral field wire around it, aren't you? You know.
So it was there just in case you needed it.
Well, I had no idea why I put the spiral wire there, but...
So effectively, this orgone ranger kind of energy,
cleaner and amplifier.
It's
now acting symbiotically with the pipe as well.
Yeah.
So the pipe's acting as transmitter and receiver, the orgone ranger is. And I doused, and gradually we got the diameter of influence built up, and we now have a fairly steady 10-mile radius, so 20-mile disc.
Yeah.
Of healing going on, and people come to the site and they love coming to the site, and they used to say it was all a bit spooky and a bit weird, but they don't say that anymore.
No. You know? And then this water goes back into the river again.
Yeah. So you know, the spinning water in the pipe and the healing work of the pipe still continues.
Is there any visible change in the river?
Nothing showing up in the chemistry, because they're doing the analysis, and I know in some detail they can't quite explain the small drop in cadmium, but they put that down to just analytical error.
Because Schauberger suggests, doesn't he, that actually getting water spinning cleans it up.
Yep, and I'm not seeing much evidence of that from the chemistry. As I say, a little bit of cadmium, which they can't explain, and it is being lowered. But not by enough to raise an interest.
So this is the Environment Agency checking out on the...
Well, they're doing analysis of the mine water that's coming out of the ground that I'm using to flow through the pipes, not clean water.
Right.
So I know what is rising out of the ground, and I've had analysis done at the bottom of the pipe because they were curious, and I asked them if they would, and they did. So they just said, oh, yeah, it's odd, there's a little bit less cadmium.
And how long's your orgone ranger been?
That was triggered by the process here. So I built it within about 2 or 3 months. So it's been running for 9 months. Mm-hmm. And
you got any idea yet where you're taking the project next?
Yeah. Strangely enough, I seem to be moving, because I'm being shown. It's like I'm at school and I'm being shown different things all the time, and I'm moving more into sort of healing. I've been doing distant healing for quite a long time. I've been meditating in the bath, going off, and having all sorts of fascinating things happen where I'm allowed to bring healing to different places, different people, animals, you know, I've got Caduceus on the City of London that's doing some karmic healing.
Great.
Yeah, I know, yeah. I know. But you know, I these things are shown to me.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm just being taught stuff and shown stuff, but the healing, you know, seems to be coming a little bit more, like into the physical now. I'm starting to occasionally, all of a sudden, I get this kind of very strong urge to grab hold of somebody and just like, here's something, I don't know what's going on, but it's for you, and it's now. And it's coming from the source, through the diva in the pipe, via my little copper harmonizer thing that I carry, and given to that person at that time.
So you're actually managing to move this energy around remotely to the pipe as well?
From the pipe.
From the pipe.
Yeah, that's right. But the other thing I've been shown, it's a bit of fun, the little copper harmonizer, I've been asked to dip it in different water flows. And what we seem to be getting is an exchange of information, so that we're getting the information that's picked up on the harmonizer being put into other water. And I've been sort of indicated that I should track down Sunbird because he's got water from 10,000 energetic locations around the world, so that'll be fun. But something that came from Heart of the East, which is really awesome, if I've got time to talk about that. Basically, I was told that somehow I'd created an energy ball in the ground that I'd put my energy into, and somehow it invited everybody else's energy into that energy ball, and that there was something I had to do with it, and I wasn't quite sure what. So I went away and, you know, did a little inquiry, and it seemed to be that I should take some of that soil from the location where this energy had coagulated, formed, become manifest, and take some of it to the next event and seed the next event, so that we effectively had the group resonance that we created at Heart of the East could be seeded here. And I did that this morning about lunchtime today.
I saw you scattering your soil liberally.
You did
upon
see
the ground.
That, did you? Well, that's what I was doing.
Are you going to take soil from here to
from
there?
From here and put it in the box because I've still got soil left from Heart of the East. And that's going to be mixed up, and then that's going to be taken to another location. And basically, we will then, you know, effectively grow that energetic, whatever it is that's in the soil, in just the same way as we're using the water to transfer.
We do that, don't we? Water from one source put into another source energetically.
But I've been shown to do that with the soil as well.
Brilliant. That brings to mind when I was reading about sun gazing. And the fact that you can kind of live off sunlight. One of the other recommendations I came across was that walking barefoot on soil for a given time a day has the same effect.
Yeah.
So moving the soil around as well as the water.
Yeah, but it's just the energetic, the group energetic that was... And I had to douse for the spot to remove the soil from, and it wasn't... I thought it would be under the fire pit. Nolan was quite confident it wouldn't be.
Yeah.
And it turned out to be on an alignment between the fire pit, the little fairy grotto they'd created, and this beautiful old sweet chestnut tree.
Right.
But you know, away from the fire pit. And I just went below the surface, dug a few handfuls out, put it in the box, brought it here.
Brilliant. And I really look forward to hearing your talk as well. I'm going to be kept pretty busy here. As usual, I don't think I'm going to make it out of the Avalon Rising.
I don't know what I'm going to say.
Well, I look forward to hearing it. And what about you, Lucy? Yeah. You sound like you picked on a pretty challenging subject this time.
Yes. I might live to regret this one. it has got a strap line which is missing from the programme.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is about the lost history of civilization.
Oh, we couldn't fit that bit in.
Other people got long...
It was described as a counter... Was
strap
it?
Line's far too long.
Yeah, a counter... yeah. Countercultural investigation of...
Yes. Yeah. Well, Knights Templars and Freemasons, that's really just a hook to get people listening.
But they have got themselves an awfully bad name, haven't they?
They have. And I'm just trying to shed a little bit of balance, really. I mean, create a bit of balance, shed a bit of light.
I mean, it may be that the Freemasons and Templars that we've got now are indeed what people make them out to be, but I think your idea is that they weren't originally at the beginning.
No, that's right. And also this whole issue about secrecy. You know, we've got this feeling that secrecy means corrupt. And I think that needs to be explained, that there are reasons why things are secret.
Although some secret things are secret because they're corrupt.
Well, that's true, and it's no excuse for
the assumption.
And I want to make a distinction in my talk between the secrecy that serves us and the secrecy that's about self-protection, because that's obviously not a good thing. because I want to take it right back into the ancient stuff, to the secret rituals to do with alchemy, to do with astral planing, and to do with the foundation of civilization.
So how old do you think these sources are that were being embedded so long ago in these organisations? Where do you think they come from?
Well, if you go back to the origins of cities, that's 7,000 years.
So back to Sumer?
Yes, back to Sumer, exactly. Mm. Well, then possibly even before that, but you can be sure of that date, pretty much. Yeah, because that's what I tie in with the domestication of animals.
Yeah.
That's that event horizon, which I think is so key to, you know, bringing that date out.
I don't know whether you saw it. I can't remember the guys' names now. I know that Hugh was sent a copy of this book. It's called Megalithic Empire. And it's really fascinating take on in all of this stuff on different the names of the pubs, the Saracen's Head and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, right,
but he's got a whole chapter on the domestication of animals.
Has he?
And it's about animals that you wouldn't normally associate with domestication.
Oh, okay.
It just brought it to mind. With you mentioning that.
Oh, okay.
So,
I must look that up.
Where are you going to kick off with your talk? Where are you going to try and take us to with it?
Well, really to explain that we should just cut them a bit more slack and be a bit more tolerant and understand, and also honour the fact that people paid for their lives by protecting this knowledge and the reasons why it had to be kept secret. Because I am going to contrast it with the forces of darkness. I'm going to put up the fact that there's this original blueprint to do with civilization, that is this peaceful, it is gender equality, it is all these integrated, holistic things, and contrast that with the shadow civilization, which is patriarchal, which is end justifies the means, which is a whole different way of thinking, and that came out into the Roman Catholic Church eventually. And I'm going to say that and they cast us into darkness. You know, we became flat earthers. We became, you know, because before that they knew the world was round, and they knew that the earth went round the sun. But that shows you the extent of the ignorance that we were thrown into, that we think that primitive man has always held these beliefs, and it's not true that these weren't ignorant in the past.
I think that's a really key point, that we did definitely know a lot. I mean,
absolutely.
at least 1,700 years before Galileo, people
absolutely.
Knew
they were rediscovering these facts, you see. This is the key thing. And what I'm going to say is that it's through the work of people like the Knights Templars and the early Freemasons that they pushed back the forces of darkness. They, you know, they were really key people, and people are too quick to condemn them and too quick to forget about all of these very important moments.
It was the Western Church that was actually suppressing this stuff, wasn't it?
The thing
about the Knights Templars, they actually went to the Near East.
Exactly.
In order to retrieve
the That's right, the Hermetica.
From,
and,
what were the Persians and moved into the Arabs?
Well, effectively, when Egypt declined from around 600 BC onwards, it took a long time, but eventually what happened was is that the knowledge kind of went up the trade routes as far as Haran in Turkey, in northern
Turkey. That's interesting.
In Turkey.
It's a very significant place. Where Abraham's father went to
Terah. He died in Haran. Yeah, exactly.
It's also really close to Göbekli Tepe, I noticed. Haran.
Is it? Yes, it is.
And I'm wondering whether they're the same place.
Yeah, it's possible. But you see, what's really significant is that Bernard of Clairvaux, who's the guy who wrote the orders for the Knights Templar, he preached the Second Crusade at Clairvaux, or no, Vezelay, he preached it, which went to Edessa, or Sanliurfa, which I think is the original Ur of the Chaldees, which is just south of Haran. It was a supposedly landlocked Christian enclave. Mm-hmm. It's because they wanted to get close to these people. These are Sabians, and where these are the alchemists who protected the knowledge. But they became absorbed into Islam. That's what happened. Islam effectively protected the knowledge. So when they came across Islam, Muslims, during the Crusades, that's when this contact was made, and then they rediscovered all the Hermetic stuff.
And it is the thing is, it seems to me that it is clear that whilst civilization has declined, I think pretty much, you know, undeniably, that core streams of information clearly are being transmitted quite a long way across time.
Yes.
I remember in the revelation of the pyramids being amazed to find that there's a line of really impressive buildings through something like 30 or 40 sites, and they're a great circle, right? So it's like a new equator, but it's set at about 30 degrees to the other one.
Oh, you mean round the
Earth? Yeah, it includes Easter Island and Giza and Cambodia.
Well, there's an idea that that possibly was the original equator, and that because the Earth tilted...
That's right, yeah, which is what I'm going to be talking about in my talk. Hmm? Yeah.
Or the crust slipped.
Probably both, in fact, that its axial rotation was disturbed and its poles shifted.
And that could have been this thing that happened at 3100 BC.
One way or the other.
When the climactic optimum ended, the Holocene period ended.
Yeah. The oldest thing on it, as far as we can tell, is the Great Pyramid at Giza.
Yeah. But
the youngest thing on it is 1400 AD in Cambodia, and I can't remember its name.
Angkor Wat.
I think it is Angkor Wat. Yes. And there's been places built right the way across that period, which is like nearly 5,000 years.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, they're basically all within, I think it's within 50 or 100 kilometres of this line.
Right. Yeah. And including I've seen this band, isn't it? Yeah.
Absolutely amazing thing. Yeah. And since I read about that, I've started realising that these streams of knowledge are there. We were talking earlier on, weren't we, about the idea that it's possible that mankind might have been facing a collapse of many millennia when we lost everything.
Yes.
And that what's being done here is an attempt to reduce the period of barbarism. And I would describe what we're living in now as a period of barbarism.
Yeah, well, we're ending the Dark Ages, effectively. I mean, that's what I'm going to be saying in my talk on Saturday, that this is the ending of the Dark Ages.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, absolutely.
Well, we taught that was the Renaissance, but really the Renaissance was just a move from intuitive thought into logical thought and...
Well, that's
necessary within the thought process.
Yeah, but I think the whole thing that kicks off the Renaissance is the discovery of the Hermetica, is Cosimo de' Medici's commissioning of the translation of the Hermetica. That, in my view, is the thing that actually explodes the whole thing. Because in my book, I talk about these two key periods. One, the Templar period, when they bring back geometry, they rediscover geometry and bring back that knowledge. But they don't manage to really get rid of the church at that point. They kind of hold it off. You know, they do a clever thing by protecting the Templars so that they're not under attack at that point, so they can continue investigating knowledge, but they don't really succeed. It's only Cosimo de' Medici, who's obviously related to the Pope, where he can't touch him.
Mm.
And so that explodes the whole thing in a really significant way, and that's the rediscovery of the Hermetica after the fall of Constantinople. That comes back into...
And aren't we moving there? I mean, I know there's a lot of people place a lot of emphasis on reason and logic for sorting things out, but it seems to me to a great extent that reason and logic is what's got us to where we are, and what we're seeking now is more intuition.
Totally agree.
Well, it's this left brain, right brain thing, isn't it? And this is one of the things that I contrast, is this whole way of thinking where the end justifies the means, which is this militaristic way, because we apply it to environmental destruction, economic stuff, whatever it is, military doesn't matter. Whereas in the ancient way, it was how you do something is as important as why, because it's all connected.
Yeah.
And that I do contrast those two things very, very strongly.
Yeah.
It's so important.
Well, that again sounds like it's going to be really interesting.
Yeah,
I'll be in there. Unfortunately,
it clashes with no one talking about bees, but never mind.
Oh, dear, this is the problem with running two arenas, is that you're bound to be missing something.
I quite like to go and hear Nolan.
Yeah, well, perhaps we'll just have to make sure that Nolan's talk gets recorded.
Oh, that would be good.
I don't know whether Synchro bought her voice recorder. We do have the capacity to record two talks at once. Yeah. But I think that's we seem to have filled our 3 hours really nicely.
Awesome.
We're just under 10 minutes away from the midnight, which is officially the end of the show.
Oh, right.
And I think, being as it is the first night, we ought to be getting out there and doing a bit of beer drinking and partying and chatting around the canteen table and all that sort of stuff.
I mean, what's the point of being at a festival if you can't do that? And it's looking gorgeous out there.
It is looking gorgeous. The Fairy Glen's all lit up with night lights. We've made ourselves a 7-coil labyrinth round a really old oak tree. In fact, what I'll do is, I've got my camera here, I'm going to try and take a load of photos of the festival, and then next week I'll put up a slideshow and I can talk people through some of the things that we've been doing.
Do you remember a couple of years ago, they did a lot of work around that oak tree? There was a lot of metal buried in the ground.
There was,
was a very sad-looking tree. And now it's looking so happy.
It is. It's looking very healthy indeed. And the children especially really seem to enjoy walking the labyrinth. It's great. Takes a bit of time. And then there's a nice seat, I noticed, all the way around the oak tree now. So when you get to the middle, you can rest.
Mr. Cutty's been very busy this week.
Yeah.
You had a hand in that.
I did. Yeah.
Well, thanks very much, both of you, for that. That was brilliant. I'll put on a couple of tunes and then get back to them before the end of the show. And then maybe I'll play a few more tunes. Who knows? But
Thank you. Looking forward
very much to spending a few more days with you. And
Can I request my favourite tune that you and I reminisced about? Holiday in Cambodia from the Dead Kennedys.
I could certainly try and find that. That is a really great tune.
I don't
have it on here, but actually I can now stream the YouTube thing, so in order to make sure I'm remembering how to press the buttons, I will go looking for that. First of all, I'm going to play You Can't Boogie with the Boogeyman by Motorhead, because we haven't had any Motorhead
yet. We'll do Motorhead then.
Here we go.
Okay, Harry, what are we going to do now? I'm getting disequilibrated.
Well, I believe T-Bone's on tonight.
Cup of coffee, perhaps?
D-Wayne, we haven't been out this long to be drinking coffee.
Well, okay, let's go on in then.
Hey, get to that bar quick, brother.
Okay, I'm setting them up.
Two JDs from in there, love. That's bottles.